Good morning, everybody. My name is Rick. I'm an alcoholic. You know, and I just had this amazing calm come over me because about a minute ago, you couldn't have yanked a needle out of my ass with a tractor. And I'm thinking, should I swear or not? So I guess I am. And, you know, sort of like, can I do this without saying the F word? And I don't know if I can, but I'll try because out of respect for some of you. All of you. Before I even get started, I do want to thank the committee for asking me to speak. It is an honor and a privilege to speak at any meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous anywhere. And I really love this conference in particular. Today, my partner and I are also celebrating 7 years. Did a check first. 7 years together, and it started here at this conference, so it's very special. I'm going to try to make it every year. And, here's a deer. He brought me water somewhere. Okay, good. So thank you for having me, and you know, I hope you're not disappointed, but if you are, there's nothing I can do about that. So there's a little confusion about, you know, people say, oh, the spiritual speaker. And I thought it was billed as the inspirational speaker, because I'm a motivator, really. And if you're not spiritual, you may have the wrong guy. But I started thinking, well, you know, everything we do in Alcoholics Anonymous is spiritual, if you think about it, even if it doesn't feel like it. And sometimes it doesn't, you know. That may not seem very inspirational, but, you know, sometimes it's just Wednesday, and, you know, not every day can be a Doris day. So, you know. But to put some energy into being, you know, excited and lit up about sobriety and staying engaged in loving life, it takes work. It takes work for me. I don't always feel like doing that. But I did in the beginning. You know, I guess I'll start there at the beginning. You know, this is the format of, you know, what it was like and what happened and what it's like today and how I try to live my life. And I do say try because I fall short. You know, and especially maybe in the last year, you know, maybe I'm just relaxing into my sobriety and I'm not taking myself so seriously. Maybe I'm fucking up. I don't know. But I'll start at the beginning and kind of work through it. And I'll probably skip around and I'll probably get lost. And so there's three kinds of pitches, I think. There's the one that I started back in April, and it was April the 12th, I think. And where, you know, you get ready for it and you plan it and you figure out what you're going to say and over and over and over and over again. And then I kind of threw that out and just went about my business and put it out of my mind and really didn't think about it strongly until, you know, those several days preceding this day and especially last night. Then there's the other pitch that happens, you know, when you're in your car driving home, like, God, I wish I had said that, because that's really about sobriety. And it was funny. And then there's what really happens, you know. And so every time I speak, even, you know, in any group, you know, you can think about what you want to say, but it really takes away from the message. You know, the truth is I don't ever know what's going to come out of my mouth. We do have that little, I call it a filter. Maybe you have one. Sometimes mine's broken, but, you know, when the thought forms in your head, you know, the thought forms, and then it goes through the filter, and it kind of whirls around a little bit, and then it comes out of your mouth. When it's working, it's great, because it's called restraint of tongue and pen, I think. Tongue, at least. So, but I don't know what's going to come out of my mouth. Hopefully it'll be good information. I grew up in a small town, Fortuna, California. I don't know if it does exist, and it's on the map. Not a lot to do in Fortuna, you know, except for buck hay and drink beer, you know. And, you know, I grew up in an alcoholic family like a lot of us did. My father was active alcoholic, drank every day. For a number of years. And my mother was sort of I don't know that she's an alcoholic. I think she sort of, you know, drank to make him bearable or drank to keep up with him or be a part of his life. And I think now looking back on it, but she was sort of a binge drinker. So, you know, me being the sum total of both my parents, I binged every day. So, you know, maybe like both of my parents. And so, you know, I used to think, and I don't anymore, and I'm glad that I had a horrible childhood and my parents neglected me, and that the older I am, that just wasn't true. You know, yeah, there was drama in the house, and Dad would come home drunk, and sometimes he'd try to run over Mom with the car, and she would try to get the hood up, pull the wires out so he couldn't go back to the bar, and there was that kind of drama, and there was some physical violence at times, which I, you know, she was, well, I don't like to remember that so much. It wasn't very often, but it happened. You know, it happened, and it, you know, up until about five, when I think I had my first drink, I used to make my dad's drinks for him because I wanted to be a big kid, and I liked the look of that he got on his face when I made his drinks, because he'd drink Jim Beam and, remember Tab? I think they still make it. Jim Beam and Tab, because he was a diabetic, and too much sugar was not good. So Tab, you know, there was no sugar in alcohol, so... So Jimmy and Tab, and I would go to the refrigerator and I'd pour like two ice cubes in this giant cup and just load it up with Jim Beam and splash a Tab for color. And I just loved the look on his you know. That's the way I made my drinks, you know. 19-ounce tumbler, you know, to go. So I got to taste it. You know, he let me taste that, and let me taste a beer, and I remember Boone's Farm, Strawberry Hills, was always in the house. In the house. You know, two sisters, an older sister and younger sister, and, you know, we just sort of, we were just that weird family that lived on the hill in this broken-down shack. Our house was really a shack. It used to be a stage stop on when there was a highway that ran through it. Not the house, but it looked like it did. You know, it's simple life. 7 acres, we had, you know, farm. Cows, chickens, ducks, geese, everything. Horses. What other farm animals are there? Some of you know. I told you, I never know what's going to come out of my mouth. So it was actually a good way to grow up. We had a lot of freedom, you know, and a horse was our main transportation. So starting at 5 and 6, you know, I could hang in there. We were taking off for miles. We're talking 20 miles, you know, unattended. That's how I grew up, total freedom. And we didn't get into a lot of trouble at that age. That came later. But I had a lot of freedom, you know, when I think about it. At the time, I couldn't wait to grow up. And that was like 5 or 6, 7, somewhere in there. And I just couldn't wait to grow up. And I had my life planned out. I wanted to be an adult really fast. I wanted to grow up now and move out and start doing what I wanted to do. Because even at that young age, you know, I didn't get my way all the time. And I don't like that, do I? And when I don't get my way, it's not good. It doesn't work for me so much. Sobriety has helped a lot. So, you know, I wanted to get out of there. And just with that thought in mind, I kind of just fast-forwarded through my teenage years. I started drinking really 12, started, you know, cigarettes and just graduated to my, you know, marijuana, which I got from my parents. My friends thought that was really cool. Yeah, it was cool. They weren't upset when they came home and that we were smoking marijuana, but it was we were smoking theirs, and they told us to get our own. And there was a friend of ours who, she was a bad influence on us, and she convinced us that we should go to our parents' room and look for things, and we found that as well as a bunch of other things, but it's not their story. Anyway, so we... You know, it's sort of fast forwarded. School for me, not so good. I think I was a good student when I was little. I got, you know, penmanship awards, and then when I got into grammar school and high school, it wasn't good for me. You know, I can't remember very many good things about it. You know, I was the rebel. I you know, just wasn't into it. I couldn't show up on time. I would just take 3-hour lunches, you know, for a whole quarter or a semester, you know, as long as I could get away with it. And I would forge my own notes to get back in, and I had that whole system where the little slips. And I found that I could take it to the library. Only reason I went to the library was to use the electric typewriter, because you could timestamp it, just like they did down in the admissions office. And I had all their signatures, and I used to sell them to people for their lunch money. So you cut second period, I can get you back in. And it worked. And it worked for a long time. And then they switched the typewriter. And so it, like, dropped the zero or something, and it looked weird, and that was it, you know. We do it as long as we can, so we get caught, you know, whatever it is. So, you know, I didn't like it, you know. But then my parents had stopped drinking. They stopped drinking for a period of 9 years. I mean, it got to the point where they actually went to AA, you know, in a small little town. And They weren't drinking. That's when they kind of went on the marijuana maintenance. I kind of jumped to that teenage years. That's when they were doing the marijuana. They were a lot more calm. But I don't know that. You know, I asked my mom when I got sober. I said, did you ever do the steps? I don't remember hearing about it. I don't remember. I remember AA. I remember 9 years of dry drunk with a little marijuana to help smooth it out for him, because it was kind of like, it wasn't too nice. That's when I wanted him dead. Oh, I wanted my dad. Oh, just how can I help? Hold out service. I just, he tried to, you know, give me back the love that he didn't give me as a child, and I just didn't want it. You know, I was too angry, and I was 15. You know, I want to do what I want to do still, and now I'm doing it. And my sister at that point, she went off to the Mormon church, my older sister, and where she probably got into a relationship with the bishop's daughter. And so we're like, you know, my older sister's a lesbian, and I'm just me, you know, the sissy, and we're in the school. I didn't really act like a sissy. I was just sensitive. I was tough at the same time, because we grew up on a farm, and you kind of had to do stuff like, you know, buck hay and, you know, build fences and fix the barn and that kind of stuff. But I was tough because I was hurting, probably. I mean, I was just in turmoil, but I was a teenager, and I thought I didn't think that that's what all teenagers went through. Everyone else in high school was having a good time, you know, and I hated them. I mean, cheerleaders and all that. I can't wait for my 20-year high school reunion, which is coming up this next year. I'm really genuinely looking forward to going back. I really am. With, I really want to see, you know, I've watched Romy and Michelle's high school reunion like 5 times. I'm the Mary. You're the Rhoda. Because it was kind of like that, you know. And you see how we change. I know how I've changed. And I really genuinely am looking forward to it and hope they are doing well. But anyway, not at the time. I couldn't wait to get out of there. I got out of that house as soon as I could. You know, my younger sister was sort of like with me. We'd go off and we'd have the same circle of friends. We're about the same age. And so we would, you know, get the car and, you know, people would chip in for gas. We have a different car about every 3 months because I might wreck one and then one might break. And, you know, it's just $200 cars every few months for teenagers. It's like clothes, cars. We went through it. So we'd get that, you know, 4 in the front, 6 in the back, a couple cases of beer, and just go out and do stupid things, you know, and try to get home by curfew. I remember driving that Buick Electra 225. It's like 1972. 455 down the freeway at 125 miles an hour, because we could, and the muffler came off, and there was just shooting sparks like 25 feet in the air, and there was in the back going, "This is so cool! I'm going to get in so much trouble." But you know, I don't care. So getting that car in the driveway with a 455 engine with no muffler, it's not something you can sneak in. But so we cut the engine and coasted down the hill into the house. Well, that's a lot of weight to stop without power brake, so we mom and dad woke up that night. So, you know, I didn't have any sense, you know, but looking back, we had a blast. I did what I wanted to do, you know. My sister and I, my younger sister and I were pretty close. My older sister was the Mormon lesbian, and you couldn't be that and be Mormon, I don't think, but anyway, she was. And so we were really kind of separated. She was sort of like, I used to tease her, you know. It's time that you're going to go to hell. We used to throw dinner. We were mean. We get along great now. I've got a great relationship with my family today. I'm glad about that. And I would threaten her, like, I'd just hold up a fork, and she'd know what that meant. Because when I was, my earliest childhood memory was, I think I was 3. And you don't remember a lot from that far back, but I was sitting at the head of the table somehow, and she was at the other end, and my parents were off to the side. That's when one of the times must have been Thanksgiving, because we were at the table. It didn't happen a lot. But I threw a fork at her from across, and it stuck right in her forehead. Like, hesitating for a minute, fell before, and she's still to this day, she's almost 40, and she has these little dots. She's good about it now, and I tease her, and I'm like, I just hold a fork up, like, oh, I'll get you. So, I will. So, try to keep her in line. So, could get out of there. We're having a fun time and, you know, just going through life the best way, you know, flunked out of school. And, you know, my teachers would get so mad because it wasn't because I wasn't smart. It's not about that. I'm smart. I might be too smart for this school, you know. And Counter wasn't too smart for Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, for real. But I didn't want to be there, you know. I didn't want to apply myself. I didn't know how. I didn't have a lot of self-esteem, as we don't when we're teenagers anyway. But so I got out of there, moved to Eureka, which was like the big city. Ooh. And I got in with 25,000 people, you know, when you grow up on a farm. And, you know, got a job as a waiter. I started drinking with people a little heavier. You know, I was 17 when I moved out. These people were in their 30s, and they're my age now. And so they lived a little, and just a little. And so started, you know, hanging out with an older crowd. I grew up really fast, and which is exactly what I wanted to do. You know, started getting little, you know, with the law. The law would come in. I also had never been to jail without the police being involved. They will show up at the most unopportune times. You know, it's very inconvenient, but it was like stupid stuff. Sometimes it was a DUI, you know, and back then it was easier. But it'd be like, I get a ticket for a taillight that was missing, and you're supposed to just buy a bulb for, what, $1.29 or something? I don't know what it is. You put it in, and they sign up, and you're done. Just, you know, simple things like that I wasn't able to do. So I would just forget about it. You know, what are they going to do? Well, they're going to probably stop you for the same bulb that isn't fixed, and then by then you're going to have a warrant for your arrest, and you're going to be on your way to some event that you're supposed to be at, and you're not going to be at it. So, and it's going to cost you more, and so I did that. The same bulb over. I mean, you know, it's insanity. So little things like that just, you know, started whirling through relationships. You know, I could hook them good, you know, charmed them, got them home, and then, you know, they were my prisoner, you know. But sort of like, I kind of said, you know, we spend like, you know, 5 minutes getting into relationships and like, you know, sometimes years trying to get out of them. And they're like, will they get away first or will it be me? And it was usually them. But they didn't leave me, you see. I had to ask them to leave. That's the way it was. You don't leave me. But, you know, at first it was just inconvenient. And then, you know, the more I started to drink, the more I got into it. You know, I started getting violent, you know, and I did some things through the years, you know, with my partners that I'm not really proud of. And some people that know me, you know, unless I told you, you would never know. But I think I'm a nice guy today. I am, you know, but I wasn't always nice. You know, I was nice. I was like manic. I'd be really nice, but if you really made me angry and the anger came up, it would turn into rage and I couldn't control myself. So I did some things, you know, physically, you know, harmed people. I mean, we would just beat the shit out of each other, you know, and bad. And, you know, so blood and broken glass and the police and, you know, hospitals and institutions, you know, and almost death. And, you know, I just did that over and over again, and I thought, God, what's wrong with these guys that I pick? You know, and you go, what the hell? God, they're so nice. Bought me a beer. Move in, you know. That was my trip. And then you just turn into this monster, you know, and that I have to defend myself or something. I was in denial. So I ripped through that. Kind of at that point, I really hadn't had much kind of sketchy contact with my family. Not that they had done anything wrong. It's just that I was, it's hard for me to be around them. And I think because they had expressed many times that, you know, we're frankly, we're worried, you know, we're worried. And I didn't like to be, I was a big boy, I was a man now, and, you know, I didn't need that. And I wanted to be left alone, and I just couldn't get close to him, couldn't warm up to him. And it was awful, and it was like that for years. I mean, I would do holidays, and I would have them over, and it was just hard. You know, I just couldn't get there. I wanted to, and sometimes I didn't. You know, it was sad. But, so, you know, just twirled through life. You know, I didn't have an instruction book. I don't know if I'd have read it, because I'm a guy, and we don't read the instructions until we really need them anyway, which is Alcoholics Anonymous, thank you. But when I needed it. But there was no design for living that really worked, and there wasn't, so I was doing the best I could. So, you know, I kind of did the cycle of cars would get trashed, or repossessed, or stolen, or whatever, breakdown, and then lovers would leave. And then usually eviction proceedings would start, and then I would lose my job. And it would happen just like that. Car lover, job, house, car, jobber, lover, house. Some combination of that. You know, get your credit back together, start paying some bills, and then it would just all fall apart again. Just over and over and over and over and over. And, you know, I couldn't hold a job. I switched jobs. I tried everything, you know. I tried everything to, you know, change. I didn't try everything. I tried a lot of things to change you know, to try to make a difference. Moving, we did the geographics. The only thing I didn't try to do was to drink natural wines. Only natural wines, as it says in our book. You know, the things we try to do to stop drinking. Only natural wines. You know what I'm talking about? That didn't, I didn't think to do that, but I don't know that that would have worked. Like, as opposed to the unnatural wines I've been drinking all these years. So anyway. So, you know, I spent a lot of time in Guerneville, and I had to get out of Humboldt County, and just, you know, I had to go to Guerneville. I'd been to massage school, and actually it was kind of good then. It was the 80s, and I went to massage school, and I would spend, you know, hours meditating every day, and get 6 hours of massage a day, and I mean, talk about a spiritual experience. So, and then at the end, I'd smuggle that cocaine into this holistic retreat, you know, do a little cocaine at night for another spiritual experience. I mean, it just had it wrong. So in the 80s, it was about, you know, trans-channeling, we were just talking about that this morning, you know, trans-channeling and all the crystals, and no offense if you like crystals, I just was trying that out, and cocaine, with all that, and I didn't have a spiritual experience at all, I don't think. So so I had to get out of that county, and I came to Guerneville, and I was a bartender, you know, I could do that, and met Deb in Guerneville, and she probably remembers, and working at Molly Brown's and slinging hash, and, you know, their policy was, you can have an occasional beer, well, during your shift. And so I thought, well, you know, I don't know, what's an occasion, and will anything, it's 10 o'clock, it's 10:15, and actually, if we can have an occasional beer, well, isn't that the same thing as a glass of wine or 1 1/4 ounces of liquor? And I really do prefer brandy and Coke, so I think I'll just have those, and since I'm a bartender, I can do whatever I want. And I got a job where I could do what I want. So, you know, I just sort of whirled around there. I knew everybody in town, and everybody in town knew me. So when things got ugly, they knew about it pretty quickly. And, you know, the last night I was employed there, I, you know, pretty much tore the place up. You know, my partner and I had split up, and we were both working. It was a pretty volatile situation. His name is Michael, and I have a disclaimer. My current partner's name is Mike, and we'll refer to him as the good Michael. And the other Michael, bad Michael. Not the same person. There was some confusion about that. Oh, you're still with Mike, huh? Oh, I'm glad you guys worked all that out. No, I didn't do it to him. I threw on the remote control at him, but just that once. And, I didn't hit him. So I was at this bar, you know, I got back there, and I wanted to ride home, and I started trouble. It was 3 o'clock in the morning, we're still in the bar drinking, should have been home. And he said something to me, and, you know, that little something just clicked, as it did from time to time, and I remember picking up a bottle of J&B Scotch, which the owner of the bar drank, and I threw it, and he had, like, lined up all the bottles of empty liquor on the bar, and as you get to count them all out, and it hit them like bowling pins, and it knocked them all through, and then it sent the last one flying through the front window. Ooh. And off the cigarette machine. And so then we were fighting, and, I mean, the pool table got ripped, I broke the other window, I got thrown out down the ramp, and then I wanted my jacket, because I was going to walk home. I pulled the door handle off and broke, you know. I wonder if he's called the police yet. I knew I couldn't stop the behavior from happening, but I knew that I better hurry up because I've got a window here, you know, and somebody's going to come and, you know, there's noise happening here, you know what I mean? There are neighbors. So I knew to run, and I did. And I remember just walking up Old Casadero Road and hiding at my friend's house and watching the police and security, you know, they were looking for me. That's what I'm explaining to do. So I went home and I passed out and I woke up. The owner of the bar called me. I thought to wake me up and remind me. I obviously overslept my alarm the next day. I was to work that morning, and I thought, oh, hi. He was so nice. And he wasn't generally that nice all the time. And I thought, oh, thanks for waking me up. Okay, I'll, you know, try to get there as soon as possible. He said, well, actually, I went ahead and covered your shift. He was so calm about it. But if you could come in, I'd like to talk to you. Okay. And so oh, my God. And, you know, where everyone knows your name, it's like cheers, and all the people that are there when it opens were like, I don't know, what did I do? And I said, I didn't remember it. So, yeah, a lot of that. So, this poor Michael, though, you know, I mean, we tried, but he didn't know how to do it either, and, you know, bless his heart. I did eventually make amends to him before he passed away, which I'm glad. So a lot of moments like that that I've been able to go back, you know, sober and clean up. So, you know, so clean, you know. And it feels good to be able to do that. You know, I just, you know, he, bless his heart. We have this little goose in our little house there, and I don't know how the goose got there, but we have this goose now. And he said, you know, Dick, his friend, his sort of gay mother-in-law, said, he wants to get me a turkey. And I thought, you know, we don't really feed the goose, take care of the goose. I don't think we should get a turkey. No, I think we should get a turkey. And I'm in work in that day, and he's coming in to tell me this, and I can't control it because I got to be at work, and I can't leave and make him not do that. But so he comes in and says, oh, we got a turkey. It's home. So when you get home, there'll be a turkey. And I was furious that he defied me. I get home, poured myself a drink, and said, where is this turkey? I want to meet the turkey. I said, oh, it's in the bathroom. Oh, the bathroom, great, you know. So I walk in there, there's a frozen turkey in the tub. It's like Thanksgiving time, you know. I thought, turkey, you know, grew up on a farm, don't want turkeys, they shit everywhere. Instead of saying, oh, how funny is that, that you pulled this little amusing joke on me, I picked up the turkey and I just threw it out the door and rolled down the hill. And they said, oh, the turkey, his name is Elmo. And you're like, oh, oh, oh. So out the door, Elmo goes, rolling down the hill. After a couple of drinks, I thought, well, you know, that was kind of funny. So maybe we should get the turkey and put it in the fridge. And I went out there and it was half devoured by raccoons, you know, frozen. So I missed a lot of opportunities, you know, when I came about it. So bless his heart, you know. We got so bad, we had moved into Santa Rosa because, you know, clearly living in the Russian River, trying to bartend and work in the same place and break up or do your relationship drama in front of the whole town wasn't working, and it was not our fault. It was the town's fault. So we tried Santa Rosa, got a day job. You know, yeah, it was Greenville's fault. And so, you know, I didn't help either, you know. I just did the Monday through Friday, 7 to 4, 5th for Brandy after work, and, you know, just changed the way I drank to adjust to my work schedule and could barely keep that job. And, you know, going a couple years into the future, I just, you know, got so bad with him that, you know, it's sort of like, and my friend Sheila would say, you know what, if you don't stop it, you're gonna come to and he's going to be dead. So people would talk mean to me like that. I thought she was being mean. She loved me and cared about me, and to the point where she had to, you know, distance herself from me. She cared so much that she couldn't watch me do that. My sister since then had written me a letter saying, you know, I love you, wish you the best, but I cannot be in your life. I can't watch this. I'm just going to wait for the phone call. I mean, that's just what I need to do to take care of myself because it's too painful, you know. And I can't get there. I can't do anything for her. I can't stop what I'm doing to make it okay for her. As much as I wanted to, it hurt, but, you know, you just do what you want to do. And that's what I wanted to do. So, you know, it got to the point where, you know, yeah, one of us is going to be dead, you know. And I kind of, like, I realized that. It wasn't enough to stop drinking, but it was enough to leave. So my friend at this time, Good Time Joe, he, it was like my, you know, he would come in and out of my life, my best drinking buddy. I mean, we could drink side by side for long periods of time. He would always look better. He never had red eyes. He never had bags. He just, you know, I hated it. I would have fair skin and, you know, the slightest blemish or stress causes me red eyes. And, you know, I'm still like that. I mean, I'm just fair like that. But, I look like hell. And so he would come into town, and he said, you know, I've got this tent, and I want to go camping. And so, all right. So we were kind of waiting, and it was like March, I think, in 94, you know, and this is the year I got sober. So it was getting kind of bad. Michael and I were fighting. Bad Michael, we're fighting again. And he said, what do you want to do? And I said, you know, I'll just fold this laundry, and if he goes to the store for something, I think we should go. I really think I need to get out of here. So we took the tent, the Hillary 6000, available at Sears, huge, two rooms. So we went to Greenville, back to Greenville. And I thought, you know, I'm just going to lay low. So we went to Johnson's Beach in Greenville, and, you know, you could get like a river view campground for $175 a month, including utilities, which there were utilities. It's great. And a cable. Because I brought my, I do need my TV for camping, so I brought a queen-size bed, color TV. You know, I set up shelves, I had a clothes hanging, it was like a, but we needed more room, we had to expand. So So we set up, he had his own tent. We had a little tent village there, but it's kind of neat. I'm like, I had cable, I had my TV going, you know, and I was living in Johnson's Beach and still working at Oakley, I think, at that time, and trying to not get fired, working graveyard shift, and just by then, you know, methamphetamine, which had always been a part of my story, really just were starting to drag me down much faster. You know, I think the reason why they call it speed is it gets us here faster. I don't know. It doesn't. I wasn't really fast when I did that stuff necessarily. I talked fast, but it's an addiction. So, you know, we're at this campground, and I just, you know, the drunks in Guerneville, the town drunks, were not wanting to do anything, but they didn't want anything to do with me. It was embarrassing. I don't know if Deb was still God, you know, they still remember, you know, the Rick that, oh, how, you know, pity is kind of what I saw in their eyes. It was, too bad he can't get it together. He's such a nice guy. You know, and I think they're all fucking up. They're out there drinking just like me. Well, how come they're focusing all their attention on my shortcomings? Character defects. Because I just lived out loud, I guess. So anyway, you know, and I, the moment, you know, the jumping off point just kind of came as I was, you know, trying to kill a bottle at, you know, I don't know, 10 in the morning down by the river and trying to scrape whatever I could out of my drug paraphernalia, just trying to get the day going at 10. And, it's, you know, it's just, it's over. And I started dating this guy, and he said, you know, you might have a problem with alcohol. And it's sort of like, you know, people have been telling me this for years, but, you know, it's like no magic. It just sort of, I heard him. It was really that easy. There was no, you know, the clouds didn't part and the light coming down illuminating me. And it wasn't like that. It was just, you know, you're right. And so it was like in an instant, I said, you know, I need to go to a meeting, and I need to go to one tonight. It just happened that fast, the transition. I stopped. I mean, I tried to do it. That was about a couple of days later. There was a couple of days where I tried to get drunk and loaded, you know, drinking those huge bottles of wine and, you know, full bottles of alcohol, and just couldn't get drunk. And that's happened to a lot of us. You know, you pisses you off. It's just an incredible waste of money. Nothing. You know, and I'm like, I should be dead. And many times I was, you know, almost dead and showed up for work, you know. 0.27 on the way to work? That would kill some people, you know. That's the way I drove around, you know. And so, you know, so I tried that, dashed off to AA. He took me to my first meeting. And boy, then, you know, things started to change. I wanted to get sober. But I wanted sobriety. I wanted it to stop, and I was willing to do anything. I was at that point where, I'm tired. I'm just really, really tired, and I don't think I can do it anymore. So then I wanted to get into treatment, and that was, I couldn't get into treatment fast enough. Okay, Rick Moore's was sobered up, and the door should be opening for me as they have in the past, and then it didn't happen right away. Well, we can get you in a month or so, or, well, yeah, we do take credit cards. And I thought, well, how can I get a credit card? I don't have any left. You know, I didn't have the forethought to go, well, you know, because I didn't know about amends and what that was about, but I guess I could steal a credit card, charge your own recovery, just make amends for it later. I wasn't that smart. But I got in 3 days. I got in fast, and I said, you know, I just need to be somewhere. You know, I had, like, my insurance would cover 5 days of medical detox, and I had 3 days. 3 days clean with somebody watching me the entire time, you know, please don't leave me because I don't trust myself. I don't want to, but I just don't trust myself. I really don't. And so he watched me. And I got up in St. Helena, you know, nice place. Swimming pools, movie stars. And, yeah, $15,000 or something like that. And they said, you know, we can't ethically take you because we're medical detox and, you know, you're not falling on the floor flopping around with, you know, convulsions and, you know, your past not shaking too bad and, you know, you're on the mend, you know, we can't take you. And I was just, oh, fuck, I just drove past all my favorite wineries to get here in a hurry, and I luckily made it to another treatment center where they took me. So, you know, I got in there and I did it. You know, the counselors were mean to me, and it was, you know, hypersensitive. You just shut up, because I was a talker, you know. I thought, you just keep talking and that'll disarm them. You know, they won't figure it out. They haven't seen anybody like me. And they had, so, you know. And one in particular was just mean to me. And, you know, I since then I've seen him at meetings and I just love him. He's wonderful, you know. And so I did what they said. You know, they took us in vans to meetings. They said, you know, look, you're here for a limited time. There's 18 of you in this room. One of you's probably going to make it. I kind of thought we all were. And I learned that wasn't true. So we got out of there. You know, Teddy's at the park drunk. I mean, like, literally left his bed, went to the park, and was drunk within an hour. And, you know, they just, like, watched him drop like flies. And I thought, you know, I can't do that. You know, for once in my freaking life, I've just got to do something. I've got to do something. I've got to make it work. So it just, you know, made me dive even deeper. So when I first got here, and for what I think several years, I was like, you know, involved, you know. Secretary, literature, coffee, you know, you remember fighting for commitments with some people? Service teacher, so out of my way. So I needed it. It worked. Sponsor, meetings, call people, go to coffee, you know. Elena is here, you know, and Lonnie, there's three of us that kind of grew up together, and we're all within a couple months of each other, and we, you know, we just talked, and we hung out, and I stick with the winners, and, you know, find the winners, you know. I was hanging out with losers, so it must be the other people, you know. And, not you. Not me. So, stick with the winners, and I did. I met some, you know, and me and my wife began to change, you know. It changed drastically. It's been altered. I've been rearranged. And, you know, it says, I like the promises when they read those. Because that's what I heard. That's what I wanted. I'm like, you promise? You know, I'm like doubtful here. Really? If you do this, this will happen. And, you know, your whole attitude and outlook upon life will change, you know. It doesn't say in there it'll change right back next Tuesday if you're not careful. Because it might. But, you know, if you're engaged, you'll have the spiritual awakening as a result of the steps, if you take that action. And I did. I got a great sponsor. Love him. Still talk to him. And, you know, he helped me. Good? Great. Got a great sponsor. Get a great sponsor. He helped me a lot. He spoon-fed me the big book. Just, you know, spoon-fed. He taught me all the big words. He taught me how to use a dictionary to look up the big words. You know, and he would say things like, and he got, like, made me, you know, we can't do it by ourselves. We need help, I think. And everything everything I say is my opinion. Well, we need help. I think we do, because we read the book. I wasn't a very good student. I would read something and I'd forget what I read. It was history or math. I just don't pay attention. I don't care enough, but this was important enough to really get it. And so, you know, we would read a paragraph at a time and talk about that for the whole 2 hours, and then we'd meet the next week, and sometimes we get a page, and sometimes we do a whole chapter, but a lot of times, there's a lot of meaty things in that book, and so, you know, get out your dictionary and look it up. You don't know everything. You don't. You know, and drill on that into my head, and so, you know, my life began to change again. You know, it says in the book, you know, sweet relationships are restored, you know. The war was over. I lost. Thank God. I was tired of fighting anyway. So, you know, sweet relationships restored, you know, your life you begin to build it again. And but this time from a new place, you know, starting with the foundation and all, and it's grown from there. I mentioned that not every day is a Doris day because, you know, if you're not careful, it'll change back. You know, I used to be bitter, disillusioned, and cynical like on a daily basis and, you know, looked at the world like, everyone's out to get me, and I'm just going to get what I want first from life, and then, you know, before you get it, preferably. And, you know, that begins to change. You know, I could probably go on all day, but I won't, about, you know, just the grace. I've heard that word used here. This, you know, grace, that's when God does for us. Who said that? Judy. When God does for us what we can't do for ourselves, and that, you know, that has been true for me. I'm just not smart enough to figure it all out sometimes, and I need some help. And there's been wonderful people that have helped me out through the years, you know. There's people I can call at any time, day or night, if I need help, and I know that. you know. And what else? It's true. The way I try to live my life today is I try, you know. This last year I've done a lot of traveling. I've been sort of in a different place. I traveled all summer for work, you know, to the point of exhaustion. So my spiritual center got a little up. It's a half bubble off plum, pretty much, all summer. Are you getting to enough meetings? No, but I got to go speak at this meeting. So I should go to a bunch before then, so I'll appear spiritual. But this is the inspirational meeting, not the spiritual meeting. Oh, God. Pressure. So, you know, we don't do it perfectly. I don't. I did, now I don't. You know what I mean? Like, when I was 1 year, and 2 year, and 3 year, I thought I was doing it. Well, I was. I was putting a whole lot of energy into it, but we never do it perfectly. It took me a while to learn that. You know, I think I'm just relaxing into my sobriety. You know, I'm not a total fuck up because I'm not going to just the right meetings and doing it, and I'm having spiritual thoughts every minute of the day. As recently as last week, you know, we were on this trip going up to look at some property in Northern California. Okay, this is Northern California, really far north. And we were coming back, gas station along the way, and the line wasn't moving as fast as I thought it should. I mean, like, I'm 3/4 of the way done with my coffee, and I'm in line still, right? And I just want to pay for some gas and get going. I'm in a hurry, an incredible hurry. Don't you know? So I tried to, and there was no other alcoholics in the room, thank God. I left the front desk when I was checking in. I'll get to that in a minute. So there was nobody that knew me, so I said, excuse me, can I just have my fucking credit card back so that I can go? Was kind of what came out. Because some of my filter got broke. I was a little tired, a little angry, a little back was hurting from dry. And I just, you know, don't you know who I am? The poor lady, she came out from around the, assisted me with a smile, and I was on my way. And I'm like, lady, I'm 3/4, I mean, I'm going to walk out with these donuts. If you don't, I mean, I was like, not nice. And if I had called my sponsor with something like that, he would have said, sugar, was that the most spiritual thing that you could have done at the time? I guess I could have done it a little better. And I try. We try, you know, for it's practice, not perfection. What is it?
Progress.
Not perfection. That's what it is. You know, I have a favorite page in the big book. It's 132. It's, I think, 13 lines down from the top of the page and 13 lines up from the bottom. We absolutely insist upon enjoying life today. You know, I was miserable before I got here. You know, not every day is a doors date, remember? Sometimes it's just Wednesday and there's nothing going on and it's just, you know, it's must-see TV and then you go to bed. But you didn't kill anybody that day, you know, and hopefully you didn't harm anybody that day. And so sometimes that's as good as it gets, but I'll take that. You know, I'll take that. We absolutely insist upon enjoying life. You know, I do most of the time. I still get to do what I want to do, which is really cool. What I try to do is to not do it at the expense of others or, you know, and, you know, does that make sense? I mean, I didn't care before and I do now. Luckily, it's worked out that way. Great partner. Great God. I don't know. Maybe I'm full of shit. But seems that way. Feels that way. Feels true. Got a lot of wonderful friends and, you know, I getting to that point where it's sort of like I can't tell you anything else that you probably don't already know. Welcome to the new people. I didn't mention that. You know, if you keep coming back, then I'll keep coming back. You know, it's not working out there. And I need to know that. And you know, and your presence here will tell me that. It isn't working. If it was working, it would be, we'd all be disappearing, you know, and we wouldn't have that. What we have right here. I think I'm done. I think, you know, that's it.